t-shirts, denim, etc. 23% of people say yes, golfers should be able to wear whatever they want on the course, but the overwhelming majority say no. What do you think?
Yeah, I have to go with no, because the latitude these days in society in terms of what we wear and how we wear it is a lot different than when I grew up playing this game. I mean, there was a time that in a lot of places you couldn't even wear shorts. And I know at Wingfoot, when I was there for a couple of years, the men cannot wear shorts at any point. Now, some of it may be because of, you know, the ticks and different things that they have as far as, you know, trying to protect yourself. But at the same time, it's just the way that it is. And it has been a gentleman's game ever since the test of time. And I do think that some of the standards have been relaxed for all the right reasons. But I can't get into first off, playing golf in your jeans. Are you kidding me?
I can't stand that. I wouldn't be able to do that.
Oh, God. I'd rather go to the dentist, honestly, because for me, I just love playing in shorts. It's really hard for me to play in long pants. And I think that's just because, like in sports, whenever we traditionally do things, we're usually in a pair of shorts. Mm-hmm. And it's just more of an athletic feel, I guess. But, you know, the collared shirt, I can go with a T-shirt as long as it's of a nice, neat, it doesn't have some goofy saying on it, and it's torn and tattered. They make, you know, sport T-shirts, you know, that are very, you know, classic and nice. That I would go with that, but I wouldn't let people have open-toed shoes and all this other stuff. I do think there needs to be a certain decorum, just because I think the way that the game has been built, and I think it's just it's out of respect. It's how the game was originally founded, and I think we should hold on to those kinds of standards.
Well, if you're a jeans golfer, give us a call. You wear jeans while you're playing golf. 312-332-3776. Come and defend yourself, because I couldn't imagine playing golf in jeans. It would get too hot. Can you imagine a day like today? You're out there in jeans, drenching sweat as you try to hit the golf ball. It would be horrible. And to bounce off of that, one of the other questions was, how important is it to you to look good while playing golf? And the 17% of people said it's very important to them. 57% said it's somewhat important. And a quarter of people said they don't care how they look as long as they hit the ball straight. I'm a person who believes you look good, you play good, you feel good. So I always try to look my best when I play golf. I don't know about you, Mike.
I am right there with you. I'm the one that's always asking my wife, does this match? do these go together? You know, I have 5 or 6 pairs of shoes, so I can match the shoes to the outfit, the hat, you know, and all that. But again, I think to your point, when you look good and feel good, you generally take that out to the field to play. And whenever I grew up in Little League Baseball or when I played ice hockey, I always was from head to toe neat, presentable, and I just looked right. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like I had an edge if I had everything looking right. And I think there is a bit of an intimidation factor when you have it all put together and you can walk up to the tee and you're all put together and you may look like a tour player, but until you swing, but at the same time, they start asking, I wonder who this guy is. He sure looks the part. So you're getting into their mind a little bit, I think, that way. And then if you step up and unload on the first tee, well, then now your game's matching your attire. And now they're starting to get concerned because they don't know you. And so I think it can be misleading in the other way, though, too. I've been a part of hustle games where they told me to wear a T-shirt, tennis shoes. And
were you hustling people, Mike?
Well, I wasn't. It was the other guy. He told me to be there. And so, yeah, I played as a guy who didn't look like he belonged on the golf course at all, but in fact, it was just the opposite. And
we have to dive more into this. Yeah, so you had a guy who had you show up in a T-shirt and shorts to play golf and beat people? Is that what was going on?
Well, basically, yes. And in fact, it goes even further that they took my clubs from me the night before and they put them into a rental bag. So that when I told them I don't have my clubs, they said, oh, we'll get you a rental set from inside. And when they brought out this purple rental set bag, my clubs were sitting inside.
How old were you when you did this? Were you a seasoned vet at that point? 15? Man.
Yeah. And it was funny, the amount of money that we ended up winning. I went home with it, and my mother thought I got it in a different way, and it wasn't true. I just did it playing golf.
That's impressive.
But it was one of those. I grew up out at the Village Links back in the day when hustling golf was really a thing. We had people out there that were lining up what we call the big bet. You know, they'd have guys in from out of town, and they'd purposely lose in the first couple of matches throughout the days that they were there. But it was all being set up for that final, final bet. And I watched a lot. I probably learned a lot more than I should have when I was in my teenage years when it came to hustling and watching people and how they gamble, because these hustlers had no other job. This is how they made their living.
Did anybody ever get upset with you while you were a 15-year-old kid and you went out and beat somebody and they got upset afterwards?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because the guy that set this up leaned over to me and he said, "When I tell you to hit it either out of bounds or in the water, I mean it." Like, for that very reason, like, we can't get caught doing this. So I would have to stage some bad shots here and there for him, and, you know, to make it. But I did see some situations that I wasn't involved with. But the people, when they walked off the golf course, they really realized that they had been had over the course of the days. And I saw some pretty stern conversations, let's just say. But I never saw fisticuffs. But it was close.
Do you think that's something that still happens with people hustling other people at the golf course? Because that's not something I've seen personally, but I'm not good enough to be going out and betting on rounds with random people, because I just know I'll get beat.
It's alive and well. It's going on all over the country, and it's going on all day today at courses all around us right now, because it's just part of one of the most enjoyable parts of the game is being able to put a few dollars on yourself and or with among buddies. But no, there are people out there that still make their living doing that kind of thing and playing in money games. And, you know, it's almost like The Color of Money, the pool game with Paul Newman, you know, and hustling in pool. It's the same deal. But it gets harder and harder. The reputations, you know, you become discovered and you're like, ooh, you know, Jack McGrath, we got to be careful of him. You know, he's a little edgy. He's sharp, man. He plays as a 9 index, but he's truly like a scratch. And, you know, I've had people tell me, in most cases, if you're going to be a bear, you might as well be a grizzly. So they jack their handicap up a bit, and that's what we call sandbagging. And that's really not something you should be doing. But people do it, and, you know, that's just what people do. But the game is made to be, you know, handicapped in a sense for fair equity. And if everybody follows the game and reports their scores like they should and every time, then you should have an index that is fair and realistic. It's those that, you know, play with it, and then that's what they become known as, sandbaggers. But those are the same people too that also find it very hard to find a game once they become discovered.
312-332-3776 if you want to jump in on our conversation about Mike apparently was a hustler in his younger days, maybe not totally, but if you want to jump in the conversation about hustling at the golf course, 60%, 70% of people said they sometimes or always gamble on the golf course. So it's 100% a thing that happens. Only 30% of people never gamble on the golf course, according to this golf.com survey.
I would think that that's probably high. I think it's greater than that. I think it's higher than 80% or 60%. And again, even if you're playing for hot dogs or Cokes, you're still gambling of sort. Now, playing for the big bucks, I'm a firm believer that playing for money that nobody can afford makes for a bad situation, a bad experience. I think even, in fact, I've gotten to the point where I really don't have to play for money anymore to enjoy it, because I just love the task at hand. But if people want to play for, you know, some money to stay engaged in the game, I have no problem with that. But I do have a problem when the stakes start getting out, you know, outlandish, and people can start pressing and doubling up. And the next thing you know, a friendly game turned into something that people are now looking in their bag, seeing, did I bring enough money? Did I bring a check? Can I write a check? Can I Venmo? You know, and that's the worst feeling. You got to go home and not only tell your loved ones you spent a lot of money playing golf, and then you got hammered on the golf course gambling. And that really makes for just, I think, a bad experience. And for somebody like myself that has, you know, played the game up at the professional level. Now, I didn't make it in a big, big way in any stretch of imagination at the club pro level. But when I try to gamble or play with people, then at the end, it's usually not fair. Well, you used to be a professional. So if I win, I don't win. And if I lose, then it's like, oh, I beat you. You know, I beat you. You used to play as a professional. So it's kind of funny how gambling for me is generally a no-win proposition most of the time. But if I'm with friends that, you know, totally we understand each other and we understand our wherewithal and we want to put a couple of bucks on it, I'm all good with that.
Rich on the south side wants to chime in. He has a story on the golf course about some gambling. Rich, how are you?
Hey, Rich.
I'm good. How are you guys? I got a good one. I used to sell hot dogs for Cafe Brower up at the lake when I was about 14 years old. And Ernie Banks, after they, you know, play a single game and it'd be done at 3:30, he'd hustle up to what was Waveland Golf Course, now Sidney Maravich.
Yeah.
And him and Manny Trio, if they were available. Well, they used to get up there and they would golf with this Cuban guy named John Perry. And John Perry, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know the guy's just a big old dude who could hit a golf ball a mile. Well, they used to gamble, and they would always try to take this guy, and he would always wind up beating him pretty bad. And then, to make matters worse, you know, I asked him one day, I said, John, you got a new Cadillac every year, every other year. He goes, you can thank those two guys over there. So they got hustled so much that guy was getting Cadillacs from these guys.
I don't know if it's hustling as much when he keep getting beat over and over and over again. They know the guy's good.
Yeah, well, Ernie had a game, man. So did Manny Trio. They were good. This guy just, he just knew how to, like you said, you bait him. Like this guy was saying when he was 15. He baited them, and they just would try to kick his butt every chance they could, and they thought they could because he'd flub a few of them here and there. He just made it look good.
Great call, Rich. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's amazing.
That is really cool. Ernie Banks, what do you think's the better sport to translate into golf? Because for me, it's always been baseball or hockey are the two best sports that some other athletes play, and then they become really good golfers once they get after their time. But we've also seen some basketball players. I saw a shot of LeBron James swinging a golf club earlier today. What do you think? Like Ernie Banks, he's obviously probably a good golfer, right? Because he has that power that he can hit with the bat. I know it's a completely different swing almost, but he still has the hip power, the hip movement, and things like that, Mike.
Well, I think as you just mentioned, the hip, you know, and if you look at the new modern day of swinging, what we're leading with now is our left hip if you're a right-handed golfer. When you hit a baseball, the sequence to the ball is exactly the same as a golf ball, and it is toe tap or feet, then it's the hip, you know, spinning. And then the hands follow, and that's exactly what happens in the golf swing. It's just the difference is the plane of a baseball bat is going more or less right straight across parallel to the ground where, you know, you're driving the plane more down to the ball. So the swings, the mechanics are actually very, very close to mirroring one another. And that's why I think it's funny when people say, oh, baseball, it's going to ruin your golf swing. Not really. Actually, they are very, very much alike. And to your point about which sports convert best from the athletic perspective, there's no question hockey is one of them by far, and baseball. But I'll tell you the other one. Believe it or not, if you're a field goal kicker or a soccer player, because of the soccer style way of kicking emulates exactly the same pattern down to the ball that the golf swing has from inside to out. And if you ever watch a good field goal kicker like Robbie Gould and the rest of them, they all have a slight little draw on that football when it's going through the uprights. And that's a pattern that you would love. Who wouldn't want a tee shot that looks like those things? Just a little baby draw coming around. So that's why I noticed that Al Del Greco and Robbie Gould and a lot of these NFL kickers, number one, they've got the time, because how much can you really practice? And they explained it to me. Usually the punters and kickers are usually the best golfers. And in fact, Robbie told me that when he first got to the Bears, the punter from Ball State that we used to have, oh, what was his name, that we had years ago on the Bears. Anyway, those two would be laughing at the players leaving training camp, and everybody knew that they were going out to play golf. Oh, it was Brad Maynard. So Brad Maynard and Robbie Gould were excellent players, and they were both single-digit handicaps, but they had all kinds of time to play after they put their work in, you know, at Hallis Hall. So, you know, much like relief pitchers, they're often good golfers because, you know, they don't necessarily throw every day, and especially starting pitchers. And if you think back to the Atlanta Braves of the 90s and early 2000s when they had Maddox, Glavin, and Smoltz. Those three players, I think if you added up all their handicaps, I don't even think it adds up to 10, collectively. So, but again, they only throw every fifth day, so they've got 4 days to go chip, putt, and hit balls and do the other thing. So, you know, I it's funny you bring this up because athletes, without question, are the newest players coming over to this great game we call golf. And for those who have athletic experience in any way, shape, or form, if you have that competitive drive and you know that, hey, I can't play football the rest of my life or I can't play baseball the rest of my life, this is a sport you can play the rest of your life, and it gives you all of the same, you know, competitive juices. It's a sport that I'm seeing more and more athletes coming over and gravitating to and utilizing their athletic experience in translating it over to golf. And I think they're really discovering how fun golf can really be.
All right. When we come back, we will take some more phone calls on this because we do have some people on the phone lines. We'll take more phone calls about golf, gambling, and anything else you want to talk about. 312-332-3776. And also, Mike, when we come back, I want to talk to you more about Keegan Bradley because I think from a casual fan's perspective, it's tough to grasp the reasons that Keegan Bradley, as the captain of the USA Ryder Cup team, might not be a player on that team. So I want to ask you some more questions about that when we come back. You're listening to the CDGA Golf Show, brought to you by Geneva National on ESPN 1000.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
I just mentioned you on the radio. I said, White or Aunt Megan.
Illinois Bone and Joint Institute is proud to present the Chicago Adaptive Open. When injuries happen, IBJI's Ortho Access Immediate Care Clinics are here to help. Skip the ER and get specialized orthopedic care for sprains, fractures, and sports injuries. No appointment needed. With 14 convenient locations across Chicagoland, Ortho Access provides expert treatment from IBJI specialists, helping you recover faster and get back to what you love. Experience same-day care close to home. Visit IBJI.com for ortho access locations and hours.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Aki with Mike Gilligan. We were talking about golf and gambling a little bit earlier, and Sean wants to join the conversation. Sean, how are you?
Fairways and greens, gentlemen. How we doing?
Sean, how are you, buddy?
Doing fine. Hey, I wanted to know, have you ever read a book called The Green by Troon McAllister?
No, I haven't.
I have not, no.
It is an absolutely must-read if you're a fan of Golf Hustlers and, believe it or not, the Ryder Cup.
Oh, my God.
This PGA pro bumps into a golf hustler, gets taken on the course, and has a crazy idea about putting this hustler on the Ryder Cup team. He's got to play his way on against these other professional, you know, pro golfers. Every pro golfer in the book is based on an actual pro golfer, but you never, you know, they never say John Daly or they never say Colin Montgomery. But those, you can tell those characters are based. And it's just a fascinating read, the way that he plays with people's minds and shows them what golf is really about, which is, you know, learning and being honest and everything else. He follows it up with another book called The Foursome. Again, Eddie Caminiti on this mysterious golf resort island. You take a plane there. No windows, so you don't know where you are. You do nothing but golf and gamble all day. Just an absolute brilliant read if you're into golf and gambling in the Ryder Cup. So I thought I would share that with you and the listeners to see if they, you know, if they would like it.
It's great to hear. So what was the name of the first one more time?
The Green.
It's called The Green, G-R-E-E-N, The Green.
I'll have to give it a look. It sounds great.
And who was the
It
author?
Really is. Troon McAllister.
Troon McAllister. Okay. Wow, that definitely, those are must-reads. Thank you for that, Sean.
Yeah, check them both out. I think you'll really like them.
All right, thanks for the call, Sean. I appreciate it. And he brought up the Ryder Cup, and that's something I want to ask you about, Mike. So Keegan Bradley's the captain of Team USA, and he's been playing really well recently. But there's some controversy over whether he's going to name himself to the team. Now, for somebody that might not know a whole lot about it, why it seems to the casual fan that might be a given that the captain would play on the team. Why is that not the case?
Well, I think there's been so much built up in the way of the pageantry, the news outside of what's going on in the matches and the build up and the fanfare. And I think with it, they've put more responsibility, and more pressure on the captain. And I'm not sure the captain does any more or less than what he did in the 60s or the 70s. You're trying to put together the best, lineup you possibly can. Now, they have taken this captaincy, and some of the guys in the years recently have had, get-togethers maybe a month before or a few weeks before. They'll go in early. So they'll add some different dynamics and different, happenings, or, hey, we're going to add this to the preparation process. So different captains manage in different ways. But at the end of the day, you are trying to put into an envelope a lineup that you're handing the referee before a certain time frame that they say, hey, all lineups have to be in by 6 o'clock at night for the night before, or, before the last match ends, during the day for the matches that play morning to afternoon. And so, now they brought in this thing called vice captains. They've never had that before.
And generally, hasn't that always the idea of a vice captain? Hasn't that been somewhat ceremonial as well?
It kind of has been. And, the role, and they basically expanded it. The role was really, to your point, ceremoniously. They didn't really have true operational responsibilities. But then I think as they started to look at the role, I think some of the captains thought, well, hey, let's look at this in a different way. If I can get somebody that can complement my style, whether, hey, if I'm a humorous guy, I need some of the big, the big strong voice in the room, or maybe I'm inexperienced as the captain, I could get a vice captain that's been the captain before and maybe on President's Cup as well as Ryder Cup to offset my inexperience. But what I found is how with the team of 12, I think they recently then went into this whole notion of having a few vice captains. So then you could take a pod, like you could take one player and he could be in charge of four players or three. And based on their like personalities, try to find that vice captain that better fits that little pod of players. But I think all of this is, to my mind, a lot of overanalysis, which I think leads to a lot of paralysis, because you got to go with your gut. It's no different than a manager in baseball. I don't know that he spends oodles of hours and hours and days and weeks trying to put together a lineup card that is really just for four matches, in this case, but for his lineup on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, does he get input from the coaches? But at the end of the day, he has to make a gut reaction, and I think that's what Keegan's going to have to do. But I think the players are going to want him to play. And I would, if I was on his team, I would rather see him with a club in his hand as these fans from Europe are being as loud as ever, and the pressure and the New England and the New York and that whole East Coast mentality is there. I think this is when a guy like Keegan Bradley shines. He's a guy that runs to that type of pressure versus running away from it. And I think if you were a captain that was soft-spoken, not a real fiery guy, then I might say, you probably are better just being a captain this year. But I think Keegan should play, and I would do it under the idea that I would tell the team, if you're going to have me play, if you choose to want me to play and be a part of you in the team in that regard, then we have to come up with the agreement that I'm only going to play in the mornings if we do team stuff. Because then that way he can watch the afternoon to get the the pairing set for the next morning. So he is there watching some of the most important golf and having the pairing set the morning of. And if he's a part of that first group, he then can see the others end. And then I would do one of two things on Sunday with myself. I'd either put myself first or last. And I would probably ask the team, where would you want me to go? Do you want me to be that final match? Because if I was on the team and I had a chance for this guy, Keegan Bradley, to be our playing captain, I'd say you take that anchor position. And I think that's exactly what a great captain would do. And I think that's what Keegan should do.
I think I'm with you on that one. If he's the best player and he deserves to be there, I think he should play in the tournament as well. So do you think there's going to be a lot of politics with these vice captains that go into it? Because I know Gary Woodland was also just named. Do you think they're going to try, not politics might not be the right word, but do you think they'll try to push Keegan Bradley to play?
I think they are, and I think that's what's going to happen, because I think the addition of Gary to that speaks to me that they're getting ready to do that. I mean, I think Shea brought it up last week. Wouldn't it be amazing? Because again, if LIV didn't happen, Keegan Bradley would not be the captain right now. Phil Mickelson would be. Mm-hmm. This would be Phil's big year. But because of the situation at hand with LIV and Piff and all the rest of it, you know, Phil's decision essentially took him out of the ability to be the Ryder Cup captain, at least for now. I'm not saying forever. But at the same time, wouldn't it be something if that additional vice captain would have been Tiger Woods? I think that would have been absolutely incredible. But I think Tiger's life right now is at a point where he, if he can't be a great vice captain, then he is better off just sitting back and watching it. But I do think they're getting ready to make that decision, because let's face it, he's playing great golf. I mean, and again, if he has a good British Open, or as we call the Open, and does anything in these playoffs, well, I mean, that's a foregone conclusion then at that point.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk more about the John Deere Classic, which is currently underway. We'll also dive more into that golf.com survey. We have some fun topics for you guys. Give us a ring, 312-332-3776. You're listening to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Welcome back into the CDGA Golf Show, brought to you by Republic Bank. Jack McGrath with Mike Gilligan in for Tyler Aki today. And Mike, the John Deere Classic, the tee times got pushed up this morning, but they're off, they're rolling, and it looks like we have a little bit of movement at the top of the leaderboard. Kevin Roy is playing really well.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously started out, I think he's four under through four, so proving once again this golf course is very, very gettable. All of a sudden, you know, Doug Gim makes par on one, and he's sliding backwards all of a sudden. And that's going to be the kind of day that he is going to have to basically put up with. I mean, he's going to have to understand that some of these guys are going to start out hot. The question is, will they remain hot, and can he get on a heater? Now, he's now played his second hole, and he's already dropped three spots. So how does that play with a guy that's never won before, trying to keep pace? He now sees Max Homa making birdie, joining him, and he's seeing other guys getting hot and getting hot early. So, you know, what does that do to your psyche? You've been leading basically this event for 36 holes, and now Saturday has not exactly started out exactly the way you wanted, but can he, you know, hang in there enough, right the ship, and, you know, get on a hot run himself? And that's what Doug can do. Doug is a birdie maker, and this guy can go as low as anybody. He opened up the event with a 62, and it was more or less a walk in the park kind of a 62, if there is such a thing. But Doug did it, and he's got that firepower, and I am rooting hard for this kid, because, you know, he has been at it, and it would be good for our state to have, you know, a winner out on the tour and a guy that's winning on a more consistent basis. And Doug is a good, hard golf course player, but it would be ironic for him to come in and win at a place that is just like a birdie machine, because usually I see him do well on courses that, you know, the players are only, you know, single digits under par, not doubles after two rounds.
This course is very different than what we saw at Oakmont a couple of weeks ago. So much, so much lower scores, such better scores, and everybody's scoring. It looks like it's going to be a race to the finish line this weekend.
No, and I think it is, and it always is that way here in Silvis and out at the TPC John Deere. The golf course sets itself up for, you know, quite a few risk-reward situations, and you know, you get it going on that golf course, and you can go low. It is a very gettable golf course, and especially if the wind stays down. There is some wind right now, and with the incoming weather, you know, I'm sure it'll, you know, get worse as the day moves on. So, you know, those that went out early are probably going to be on a little bit more of an advantage depending on when the wind and the storm start to come in. But if they've given themselves enough time, then I guess all the players will work under the same conditions, and that would be obviously more to the liking, I think, of those that are atop the leaderboard. But I can tell you, those that are playing well and that went out on the golf course, like Cameron Champ, Kevin Roy, and Brian Campbell, they're all making do. They're, you know, 4-3 and 2 under already, and they've only played 4-3 and 2 holes. So that right there, they've made 9 birdies in just a few holes.
You're listening to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Aki. And, Mike, let's get back into the John Deere Classic. We'll update that before we go. Let's get back into this golf.com survey that we have here. This answer that we've been going through, these answers, they surveyed 10,000 people, 10,000 golfers, and asked them questions everywhere from your biggest pet peeves on the golf course to how many balls do you lose in a round to what's proper attire on the golf course. They asked, in your mind, your own pace of play is A, faster than average, B, about average, or C, slower than average. How many people out of the 10,000, what percentage do you think said their play is slower than average?
I'll guarantee you the number isn't all that high, but it should be much higher. That's going to be my guess. I'll say only like 20% said that.
1% of people admitted that their play is slower than average. 64% claim they're faster than average in terms of their pace of play, while 35% of people say they're about average. We were talking about pet peeves on the golf course. I don't really, you know what? If people are slow, that's okay. I don't love it. What really bothers me is when there's people slow in front of me and then there's people coming up on my rear and I have to play a little bit quicker because I feel like now I have people trying to catch me and I feel like I'm moving slow because I'm waiting for people in front of me. That's my biggest pet peeve on the golf course. But 64% of people think they're faster than average, while only 1% think they're slower than average. What a skewed view.
Oh, I mean, that's comical, because I would almost think the number should be flipped, because more people are much slower than they would ever think they are. And I know there's a lot of people who flat out tell me, even before we tee off, I'm a fast player. We get to the second hole and I look at them, I'm like, yeah, no, you're not. Because people think playing fast is just getting to your ball quickly. But if you're not ready and preparing while other people are hitting their shots or preparing to hit their shots, then you're a slow player. You need to be efficient with your time. You shouldn't be really just doing nothing. You can always be factoring, figuring, thinking, you know, visualizing, analyzing, doing whatever, so that when it's your turn, you should be able to look. Like, there's times that when I hit, like, I'll square up and get ready to hit the ball, and I'm waiting to hear the shot be pulled that who's away, and I'll hear him hit, and within like 3-4 seconds I'm hitting too. And there's sometimes my ball's in the air as theirs is still finishing out on the green, rolling or doing whatever it is, because when I get that feeling that I want to hit it, it's time to hit it. It's like, don't get me all excited to hit and then say, oh, hold off now for a few seconds, because then I have to kind of go through that whole routine again. But what I try to do is time my routine for when it is time for me legitimately to pull the trigger based on where I stand out on the golf course.
Ready golf. When you're playing, you should be a ready golf.
Yeah, and we do that. In fact, you know, Todd at Medina said, hey, guys, and I loved how he was very cognizant of where our place was on the golf course, and he looked at things exactly right. He said, we got to stay up with that group in front of us, because a lot of people always look, well, you know, the group behind us, they're not, they're far behind us. But you're not doing your part. You have to stay up with the people in front of you. That means the people behind you are also playing slow. So it's almost like if we start allowing ourselves to play slow and base it on, well, there's nobody behind me, so then that's how the golf course gets backed up. And slow play has always been a real sore subject with a lot of people, and it is with me as well, but not so much because people aren't good players. I find it really annoying when the novice intermediate player steps up and walks right back to the back tees in the group in front of me and then starts spraying balls left and right into the, I mean, he's looking for balls all over the place, and he didn't select the proper tee. If he would have selected the proper tee, he's going to have a more enjoyable day, and he's also going to move at a pace that the rest of us can play, because we're all choosing our tee sets based on how we play. But for some reason, some people think, well, I'm here at Medina 3, I got to go to the tips. And it's like, okay, you're going to shoot 100 and something, and you're going to go badly beaten home. Is that really the experience you want? But you can't believe how annoying it is to the others, and especially when the group behind you knows you have no right being back here, especially when the group that we are, we're all single-digit handicaps, and we're playing tees further up than you, and you stink.
One of the other questions on the survey was, which of these course conditions irritates you the most? They asked punched greens, unraked bunkers, or unfilled divot holes in the fairway. For me, I think it's got to be the unraked bunkers. I can't get out of the bunker anyways, but it's even worse when it's not raked.
Yeah, you know, that's a toughie, because, you know, when depending on where you're playing, like, for example, yes, you know, 2 days ago when we were at Medina 3, every bunker you went in, it was absolutely immaculate, right? So there's no reason that you would ever have to touch the ball in the bunker. But if we're playing at a place that it's late in the afternoon and, you know, and it's a public facility and chances are, we'll just say right at the beginning it's rake and roll or it's rake and place or however you want to do it, so that we're all going to be consistent in the bunkers, because that's something that sometimes the golf course just can't control the conditions of the bunkers based on when you're playing, because all it takes is one group not to rake, and, you know, then you find that one particular bunker. But the one thing that annoys me from a, you know, a conditioning perspective or taking care of the course is when ball marks are not fixed. And I want to tell you, there are ball marks that were great shots and they didn't fix it, because you can tell a ball mark that's skidding and goes deep into the green and maybe over versus one that came down and it made a huge hole. And you could tell it came down straight from the sky, so it didn't roll out very far. And when those people don't fix that, I would be so proud to be like, look at me, I'm stiff, I'm close to the hole. That to me is unforgivable. When you hit it tight and don't fix your ball mark, if it were my golf course, I'd never ask you to come back.
Is that your biggest pet peeve on the golf course, or do you
biggest
have something else?
Biggest one ever. No, well, that one is a big one. And when there's no sand in the bunkers, that's another one.
Oh, when it's dirt?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's really horrible. Because to me, that's like, you know, when you get on an airplane and you take the tray down to, you know, while you're waiting to get the flight going, and you see this coffee stain on it, and it makes you wonder, well, if they don't care much about this thing I went up on the table, I wonder how they take care of the engine. So if they're not caring much about the bunkers, well, you can only imagine what they think about the rest of their golf course. To me, bad bunkers are a sign that a golf course is heading in the wrong direction, because they're cutting back, they're not filling, they're not putting in the sand, they're trying to squeeze another year out of what we got, you know, and pushing off the inevitable, maybe we have to redo our bunker project kind of a thing based on where golf is. But I just think that that is a terrible look to a golf course when the, you know, that's what makes a golf course uniquely different is bunkers and water. And if you can't give at least conditions that are, you know, fair because going in a bunker is not easy. Let's start there. But when you don't put sand in them and it's hard pan underneath, well, it's virtually impossible, especially when you're, you know, cutting the hole close to that bunker. I mean, it's just that's an impossible shot.
All right. We got to take one more break. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. When we come back, stay tuned because we will be giving away some ESPN CDGA golf hats. That's when we come back. Also, we'll go around the CDGA. This is the CDGA Golf Show brought to you by Republic Bank.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Wrapping up the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, Jack McGrath in for Tyler Aki, riding along with Mike Gilligan. CDGA Golf Show is brought to you by French Lick Golf Resort. And Mike, right now we are going to give away a CDGA ESPN golf hat that is going to go to caller number 10 right now on ESPN 1000. The number is 312-332-3776. Caller 10 will win a CDGA golf cap. And Mike, right now it's time to go around the CDGA.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jack. And for those of you who are not CDGA members, there's no better time to join than today. I mean, you get a 12-month membership regardless of when you decide. So if you join today, July 5th will be your anniversary date of 12 months of unbelievable perks and programs that we have, of which you will get a USGA index so you can compete and gamble like we talked about earlier in the show. It would also allow you to enter in some of our championships and tournaments utilizing your newly established USGA index. And you can play in some of our social competitions and take advantage of some of the member perk programs that we have. And I think this month we've got about 36 different offers, which I'll get into here in just a second. Travel opportunities. We have just took a group up to Sand Valley. We've been to French Lick this year, Pebble Beach. I'll be taking a group up to Arcadia Bluffs if you're interested. We're going over to Ireland this year, and then we'll be going to Stream Song at the end of the at the end of October, early November. So for those of you who want to get out and travel with some of CDGA member travel companions, that we have a small group that goes on almost every single trip. So come on out and join us there. But if you join, we'll be mailing you 6 print copies as well as a couple of digitals throughout the year. So you'll have 10 magazines delivered, and then every Monday you'll get a scorecard, which we consider our weekly newsletter to keep you engaged with your areas of interest and passion and just keep you apprised of what's going on in the game, both at the professional level all the way down into the amateur level. But as I mentioned, we do have perks. And so today, if you want to try to brave the weather, there's some great golf out there to be had. If you go on up and see Ron Cassidy up at Glenview Park and you want to stay out of this heat, during the week, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., there's a $69.95 green fee plus cart Monday through Thursday up at Glenview Park. Fox Bend, Tootsum with cart Monday through Friday anytime. $90. So that's $45 a guy. That's not bad. Geneva National, if any of you are having discussions during the 4th of July holiday about getting away with some friends and whatnot, go on up to Geneva National. And when you are making your lodging and green fee booking, let them know that you're a CDGA member and you will get a 10% discount when you are booking at the lodge. So for those who want to go up to Lake Geneva, a lot of great weather and a lot of great time still left to go this season. And Geneva National's got a great array of golf courses between the Trevino and the Palmer course and some of the others that are up there. So highly recommend a journey up that way. Palatine Hills, Dan Hotchkin, another great little gem sitting up in Palatine. If you play Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday with a twosome between 11 and 1:30, Dan will give CDGA members a $110 special. And then lastly, out at Phillips Park, They've got a neat little thing happening after 10 o'clock, Monday through Thursday, twosomes with cart, $95 for CDGA members. So there are plenty of opportunities to play a lot of golf, get some really cool deals, be a part of some neat things. But all it takes is to sign up at cdga.org and click on membership and become a member. And you too can join the 120,000 strong, our little community here, and take advantage of some of the offers that we have. And they change month to month. And just through the purchases alone, you can save enough money that justifies the membership and sometimes one purchase if it's the right kind of item.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And then before we get out of here, the Open Championship is in a couple of weeks at Royal Portrush. I'm sure you and Tyler are going to dive more into the top storylines next week. But if there's just one storyline that you want to hit on before we get out of here, what would it be?
Well, I think the biggest story, is going to be Rory. I mean, this event is only going to be about, 20 or 25 minutes from where the young man grew up. And so for him, it's truly going to be a unique week because he's got the pressure of the Grand Slam now is completely off. He is now going to be able to play a game that he grew up in Northern Ireland and be able to perform at the highest stage ever for him in front of his own people. I think it's going to be a real honor and very emotional for him. But I think it would be the coolest thing is if he could win over in his native country like that, and to see Shane Lowry like on his heels too, his fellow friend and countryman. And I think Ireland would never be the same if that were to happen. So I think Shane Lowry and Rory are going to be among the major points of discussion. But there's going to be a lot of other side stories and bylines of sort, and looking forward to it. It always is great, but we have the Scottish Open first. So it's a bizarre time in golf for us because, quite candidly, it's not really the most exciting times right now when you consider the Rocket Mortgage and John Deere, and we're not going to see Scotty for like 6 weeks in America. You know, the next time we see him is going to be at the Scottish Open, and that's if you're going to stay up, to watch it, and then at the British. So, that's the one thing I think the PGA Tour and our new incoming CEO has on their agenda to take a look at. How can we restructure this end part of the season to be more celebratory and more engaging? And it just seems that July is awfully quiet for us in golf. And it just seems like we limp into the playoffs like with a whimper is probably the best way I would describe it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you. Appreciate your help today. Mike from Lockport is our winner. It's actually Mike Piazza from Lockport, but I'm told by our producer it's not the Mike Piazza, the winner of our CDGA ESPN golf hat. So congratulations to Mike.
Nice.
So it's another Mike. There you go, Mike. Yeah. Two Mikes, Mike and Mike, winning the CDGA golf hats. Mike, final thought before we get out of here today on the John Deere Classic as Kevin Roy shoots up the leaderboard.
Yeah, he's shooting up that leaderboard, but this thing is not over. Cameron Champ is as talented and hits it as long as anybody. But keep your eye on Max Homa, and let's root for our homebody star, Dougie Gim, Buffalo Grove High School, pride and joy. Let's get it done, Doug.
All right, that's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by French Lick Golf Resort. Peggy and Dion are next on ESPN 1000.